It's your direct line to sports in Fairfield County, from FCAC to college to the rich history of days gone by. It's the pulse of the local sports community. It's Fairfield County Sports Central, and it starts right now.
Welcome to Fairfield County Sports Central here on WSTC 1400 AM. I'm Tom Cipetta, your host for the next 60 minutes of local sports talk. Today we have a couple of special guest interviews for you later in the show, but we'll start the program with some baseball items as we hit the All-Star Week festivities starting Monday for Major League Baseball. But rather than talk about MLB's annual entertainment showcase, I want to focus on the local baseball scene and include that as part of our What's Happening in Fairfield County Sports segment. I want to recommend that you try to get the family out, find some time, and try to get your bait close to home. And you can start to do that actually tonight as the two Connecticut-based teams in the Atlantic Independent League go head-to-head in Bridgeport at the ballpark at Harbor Yard. Our Bridgeport Bluefish take on the New Britain Bees tonight at 6:10 p.m. And if you need any more incentive than a good dose of minor league pro baseball to get to the stadium, if you're one of the first 500 fans through the gates, you'll receive a Barack Obama bobblehead, which obviously would be a unique addition to your bobble collection. So I'm not sure that's the kind of incentive you might need, but if you're in the political world and you save those kinds of things, it probably work for you. Then Sunday at 1:10, the two teams meet again for Family Fun Day, where kids can run the bases after the game and the Bluefish players will be out signing autographs. And if you are unaware, there are actually four minor league teams in the state, the Bluefish and the Bees, as well as the Class AA Hartford Yard Goats. That's right, Yard Goats is an affiliate of the Colorado Rockies, and the Class A Connecticut Tigers in Norwich that are aligned with the Detroit Tigers. Next weekend, the Bees have a promotion called Foul Pole Friday, where if a designated player hits a home run off either foul pole, you might be the lucky fan to win $50,000. So you might want to find yourself in the stadium for that if you're feeling lucky. And then Saturday at the Bees, you can see fireworks after the game. The Yard Goats have a brand new stadium, so a trip up to Hartford just to see the facility may be enough of a draw to get you up there. But next weekend, from Friday through Sunday, it's also Hartford Whalers Alumni Weekend. So many of the former NHL standouts will be back in Hartford, and they have some special Whalers giveaways and fireworks on Friday and Saturday. So if you're a hockey fan and want to see some of the old guys that were playing up at the Civic Center, that'll be your opportunity. During the week at Dodd Stadium in Norwich, the Tigers are home on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday with special promotions each night. But if you want to stay here at home and get the real baseball stories, where they're being made at the youth level, with the district Little League tournaments being played, the youngsters can use your support to root your hometown team on. So that's the easiest way to get into the baseball mode and support our young people and the Little Leaguers. And a place that's very close to my heart, Stanford's Cubetta Stadium, is hosting the state 16 through 18 Babe Ruth tourney starting today through Wednesday. Five of the six teams competing are from the county, and Cubetta has a long-storied tradition of staging state, regional, and national tournaments over many decades. Stanford was the first host team to ever win the 16-18 World Series when that event was played at Cubetta in 1971. So get out and get to a ballpark as baseball is in full flight as we head into the steamy days of summer. And any of these places can all use your support. And going to the ballpark is still a fun thing. It may be a little expensive. And some of these places, you'll spend not a cent to get in the door. And other ones, be prepared if you're taking your family. With that said, I just want to make sure you folks know how to keep in touch with us for all that our Fairfield County Sports Commission is doing. And best way to do that is through our social media and our website. The website is fairfieldcountysports.com. On Facebook, the facebook.com/Fairfield County Sports Commission. Our handle on Twitter is at twitter.com, and then it's FC, as in Fairfield County, sports.com, C-O-M-M. So FC sports.com for Twitter, and that is also for our Instagram. So if you want to find out all that we're doing, those are the best places to go. One of the things we do have coming up is kind of baseball related as well, is our annual Tim Tuffle Celebrity Golf Tournament and down at Tamarack Country Club in Greenwich. That'll be Monday, August 7th. And, you know, Tim is still working for the Mets. He was their third base coach for a number of years and was a member of the 86 World Champion Mets. And a lot of his former teammates and some current Mets will be down. And we're always looking for support from anybody in the business community. You want to buy a tee sign, advertise your business, you can attend the dinner, get a chance to spend some time with some of these guys. So that's another opportunity of something that we're involved with and is coming up soon. So with that said, I think we'll go to our first break, and we'll be back with our first interview guest in just a short moment here on WSTC 1400 AM.
Head injuries, including concussion, a mild form of traumatic brain injury, are among the most feared and common of all sports injuries. If you or a loved one suspects a concussion, the neuropsychologists at Stanford Health's Concussion Center are here to diagnose, treat, and manage the condition. You do not have to be knocked unconscious to have a concussion, and no two concussions are alike. Symptoms such as headache, confusion, forgetfulness, sleep problems, and behavioral changes may not appear for several days. If concussion is diagnosed, our team at the Stanford Health Concussion Center will develop a customized treatment plan specific to your needs. Schedule an evaluation today with one of our qualified providers. To learn more, call the Stanford Health Concussion Center at Chelsea Pierce, Connecticut, 203-276-4123. That's 203-276-4123. Or visit stanfordhealth.org. Stanford Health, healing reimagined.
Ever wonder where you can go to find out about all the great things that are happening in the sports community throughout Fairfield County? Ever wonder how you can play a significant role in helping to support all these terrific sports and youth activities? Well, the Fairfield County Sports Commission is the place to find the answers to these questions. In our new Fairfield County Sports Central weekly radio show each Saturday, will be one of the main resources to stay informed as well as get you involved. Fairfield County Sports Commission is a 501c3 nonprofit, charitable, and educational organization that is the one-stop resource for the area's sports and fitness worlds. The commission works closely with youth organizations and health and fitness experts to keep Fairfield County moving through our Chelsea Cohen Fitness Academy. And if you're a local sports history buff, our Fairfield County Sports Hall of Fame, located at UConn-Stanford, is a must-see. When you're not tuning in to AM 1400 WSTC for Fairfield County Sports Central, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and check us out online at fairfieldcountysports.com.
Hi, this is Gary Cobb inviting you to step into the winner's circle on the Fairfield County Sports Central on AM 1400 WSTC, Fairfield County's favorite radio.
Welcome back to Fairfield County Sports Central, and now it's time for our Fairfield County Shining Star spot, where we get you up close and personal with one of the prominent sports figures in the county. And today we have a member of our Fairfield County Sports Hall of Fame from the class of 2011, Bennett Salvatore, who was an NBA referee for 33 years and who retired from trying to keep up with all those amazing athletes in the NBA in 2015. But he really hasn't moved too far from those guys, as he's still active in the NBA game today, which we'll hear about. So, Ben, thanks for finding time to be with us today.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with what you are doing now. And even though the NBA season is concluded, just a short while ago, it doesn't mean you're now on an extended kind of summer vacation, because I know you're working with the referees and working with NBA management. So
I'm part of the training and development for NBA referees. Not only are NBA referees, but young referees that are looking to become part of the NBA. I just actually got home from a one-week stay at the Orlando Summer League, where we use that as a training ground for young referees. And on Sunday, I'll be going to the Las Vegas Summer League, where we continue to use that for a training ground for our young referees. It's the NBA is 24/7. 365 days a year now, Tom.
Well, is that better for worse? But last year, at least you had some time off, I think, Ben. You were traveling all the time. But is this a better situation? I'm sure you're enjoying it. But tell us more about that.
Well, there's nothing that can replace being a referee on the floor. There's a kind of juice to that you can't get anywhere else, especially after you did it for 33 years. But being part of the development program, it allows me to stay connected with the young guys. It allows me to stay involved with the NBA. The traveling is less, thank God. I don't know if it could be more than what it was as a referee. But it's a fully engaged job. You know, our job is to keep the referees on top of the game. It's a fast-paced game. The rules change somewhat every other year. And so it's a constant, constant job with the referees to keep them sharp and to keep them upgraded.
Well, and I think that's obviously the training program is something that you probably remember well when you had to go through it, but I want to take you a step back from there, being a Stanford native. I know you had similar help in training as you got your start, and we're getting evaluated, and you have so many ties between a lot of our other Hall of Fame inductees through the generations. And specifically, I know you got a lot of help from two of the legends in our Hall of Fame, and the late Sharkey Loreno and Nick Cools, who were both basketball officials and umpires for decades. And can you talk a little bit about how, I know they helped get you started, what it meant to you, and probably mentored you through to, your high school days and then right up until you got into the NBA.
Well, they will forever be in my heart, both Nick and Sharkey, and more in the area. They created my foundation. They built my foundation, and it was really about no agenda, caring about the game, doing what's right for the game, and respecting the game. Having said that, there was a strength that they showed me early on in my high school career that you had to have. I don't want to say refereeing is like being a parent, but in high school anyways, it kind of is. You have to give the kids a discipline and a direction that the game comes first. And I will forever be indebted to those guys for taking me, A, under their wing and teaching me the right way to do things. And they really created my foundation. Now, back then it was a little bit different than it is now in the NBA, training for the NBA and trying to be seen. The programs are so in-depth today. The game is so in-depth today. I laugh all the time. When I first started in the league some 35 years ago, if you were on the West Coast and you did a game, the league office at 645 Fifth Avenue probably didn't know much about the game until 2 days later.
Hey,
everything is instant, whether it's social media or emailing or texting. You can have a response at halftime in your game versus a couple of days later. So things have changed,
The technology and the videotape and getting you to see right away if you made a tough call and it needs to be explained. So that immediacy certainly is good in one way, but sometimes you're better off let things, sometimes it give you a chance to calm down a little bit before you got to actually go back and discuss what the heck just went on, you know, in a game.
There's no doubt. I mean, with the advent of instant replay, the good thing about it is hopefully it allows us to get the play right. And that's what we're all about, is hopefully getting the play right. Years ago, you know, you'd call a play, the coach would disagree or the player would disagree. You argued for 3 minutes and, you know, that was it. You never really knew whether you were right or wrong.
Right.
We didn't have
true.
The availability that we have today.
Right.
We can instantly go into the locker room, and we have in every single arena and every locker room, we have a computerized setup, and we can view any play that we want from 9 different angles. So,
wow.
As you say, the immediacy of it and the credibility of it has never been like it is today, which is a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think, again, all sports fans, and they're still figuring, all the sports are still figuring out how to make it not too intrusive, but making sure you get the correct call and hopefully the correct outcome. So, you know, I was mentioning
and
earlier.
And that's the key, Tom, is that, what you just said is the key. We, you know, we don't want to stop play every 3 seconds to be looking at a play, because that in turn, that kills the game. But we have slowly figured out, especially in the last 2 minutes, or especially throughout the game when it comes to a flagrant type of foul, that we can immediately look at the monitor and hopefully come out with the right decision.
Right. You know, I was mentioning earlier, Ben, too, about your ties to lots of the Hall of Famers, which I find with almost every Hall of Famer has some connection to someone else. And, you know, you refereeing in the NBA for such a long period of time, you know, you had an opportunity for some of the guys that are in our Hall of Fame that had the terrific NBA careers, from Wes Matthews, John Bagley, Charles Smith, Mike Jaminski. You know, you're there on one side of it. You're on the, you know, you're on the other side of it. And the other part for me, though, that's kind of a much more of a more significant tie, you know, through our Hall of Fame is obviously through Andy Robustelli, who, your late father-in-law, and married to his wonderful, wonderful daughter, Lori. And, you know, you were, we talked about you being inducted in 2011. And Andy was one of our original honorees from the first class in 2005. And obviously, being a Hall of Famer in the NFL, you know, he was perfectly deserving. But it was at a time in his life where he wasn't necessarily looking for any more awards and things. And then I guess, you know, unfortunately, when Andy passed, we did talk to his family, particularly, you know, Ricky Robustelli, maybe your best friend, and that we worked it out that you were both inducted in the same year. The official induction ceremony came that night with yourself and Andy and his sons, Chris and Tommy, and his family there. So I wanted to talk to you about that, because you had I'm sure it was a special night, but for us, it was kind of an unusual circumstance. But we thought that it would make perfect sense for both sides, with the Robustelli family and yourself. So can you talk a little bit about that? And Andy, obviously, has been a big influence on you.
There's no question about that, Tom. You know, it was the ultimate honor going in the same night as my father-in-law. As you know, and the people of Fairfield County that knew him, there was probably no greater athlete that was more humble than he was. He was just a man for all ages and for all people. I never talked about himself, but he was a genuine man and a man of high character. And for me to go on that wall that night with him was very, very special. It was very, very special for me and my entire family, my brother-in-laws, my sister-in-laws, and especially my wife. Just a special, special guy. And honestly, to this day, you know, I walk through the UConn branch here in Stanford, and I go through that Hall of Fame, and I see all the pictures on the wall, and for me to see his picture and for me to see my picture up there, it truly warms my heart. I'm a lifer. I'm a Stanford lifer as he was, and it doesn't get any better than that.
Well, that's part of it. It's interesting, you know, in the family piece where you have with your father-in-law, you know, we've got Tommy Penders and his dad, Jim, who were there. We got the Hirschbeck brothers.
Sure.
So we've had some good family affairs in terms of that. And, you know, that was the other thing, too, that, you know, these other folks like Bobby Valentine, as you mentioned, Stanford lifers, and Ricky Robustelli. And Ricky's in our UConn wing of the Hall of Fame, and obviously Bobby's in the same professional wing. You were quite the athlete yourself, and while you didn't go on to fame and fortune on the playing field professionally, you obviously made an incredible career out of that. But sometimes it gets lost in the shuffle that you were, you know, a terrific, terrific, outstanding high school and college athlete, and football, baseball, you know, quarterback at then Stanford Catholic, and an incredible winning record there. I think, you know what, it was about one game that you guys lost during your tenure in part of
Rome. Yeah.
A world champion.
Tom, I was blessed. Yep. I was blessed, Ricky, Valentine. We were blessed to be part of a golden era of sports in Stanford.
Right.
You talked about, as you said, you know, you had Rip Long, you had Stanford High, West Hill wasn't born at the time, and Catholic High. All phenomenally successful programs, all headed by tremendous coaches. And then you bounced over to the Babe Ruth League during the summer where we had great success. And it truly was a golden era. And I was fortunate to be surrounded by teammates that may have not been the best at their positions, but as a whole, and that's what Stanford taught you, was to play as a team. That was our ultimate goal. As a whole, we had great success. And I couldn't be prouder of that.
Yep. You know, you were a pitcher on that first World Championship senior Babe Ruth League World Series team in 1968. And so I guess I wanted to ask is, your baseball and football were your main sports. You did play basketball, but I think you've always said kind of
was
your sport. Right. So just tell us again. Tell us quickly on the actual starting point of getting into basketball, and I believe it started at the youth leagues, and we mentioned the Sharkies and Knicks. But where did you actually, you know, take that
the
first step?
Call, I remember it like it was yesterday. I was home. I was probably 21, 22 years old. And John Sharkey Arena called me up and he said, Bennett, I need you to help me with Stanford basketball for youth this afternoon. I said, Shark, I played a little bit, but I've never done that. And he said, don't worry about it. Just come to the game. You run up and down. Don't blow your whistle. And I'll stay at half court and make all the calls. And that's basically what we did. I fell in love with the game. I got my high school patch. I worked some years in high school. I had some nice things said about me where, again, going to high school now, you had Johnny Valmis, John Hagen, all guys that I worked with, all guys of extreme character and strength. Nick Cools, as you mentioned. And they taught me the right way to officiate. After high school, some high school years, I had some nice things said about me. I paid my own way out to it was basically a tryout in Los Angeles. I was fortunate that they liked me. They put me into their minor league system. 2 years later, I got a job. Now, that's the short story. I mean, there were a lot of nights doing basketball in Harlem, driving to Washington, D.C., where you really could find the best basketball. The pro-am basketball to hone in on your skills. It was a great journey. It was a wonderful journey. I mean, I had from Julius Erving to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic, Bird, Michael Jordan, obviously, to today's superstars and all of the players, LeBron James, and this
That's kind of what I wanted to ask. I kind of wanted to ask you to kind of the end, you know, the end of your journey. You know, even though you're still involved with the game, but you were really over a 33-year period of time. You were kind of a firsthand observer of the evolution of the NBA game. You know, to what it is today. I mean, you did over 1,800 regular season games, 238 playoff games, 25 NBA finals. You just said the game's kind of evolved into, you know, and I guess with Golden State and where they've gone, this kind of three-point barrages and the up and down. Can you just talk a little bit about where you think the state of the game is now? And is it, you know, it's always different. There's been eras. It was the Lakers and Celtics banging at each other and the Pistons with the, you know, their styles of play. But Golden State and Curry and now with Durant, why don't you, can you kind of wrap up in talking about where you think the NBA's at and, you know, from your perspective?
Well, the NBA itself could be in a better place. I mean, we have grown in tremendous leaps and bounds. We're an international sport now. I think we have over 100 players from Europe. But the game has changed. The three-point shot has entirely changed our games, and it's changed the way we referee. It's changed the mechanics of where we have to look down court. But, yeah, in the old days, you know, it was a little bit of hand-to-hand combat. It was more post-play. It is a little bit more of a free-flowing game today. But it couldn't be better. I mean, we have players that they shoot three-pointers as though they're layups. And it's great to see. These are skilled players. This is not, you know, years ago, if somebody shot a three-pointer, it was a surprise, you know, when they first put the three-point line in. Now it's a weapon. And they're going to be modeled for years to come, when I say they, the Golden State Warriors, on their success and their shooters. But the game has changed. I think it's changed more so than ever because 1 through 11, 12, 13 players are phenomenal players. When I first started out, you know, if your starting five was strong, that was good. But maybe didn't have the quality bench players that we have today. Mm-hmm. Our teams 1 through 11, 12 today are, they're all great players, and I think that's probably the most significant change is the growth of the entire player, the entire squad.
Well, Ben, listen, we really thank you. It's always always great to talk to you. And are you actually home, or are you still on the road?
I got home last night, and I hit the road again on Sunday.
Okay. we knew we can get you by we get you by phone here in between again. Can't thank you enough, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thomas,
again, thanks for taking time.
I want to take a second just to thank you for all you do with Fairfield County Sports. You are a mainstay, and you have been for, you know, I don't know how old you are, but it's been a long, long time. And please keep it up because it means a lot to the old guys like myself, as well as I'm sure it's going to mean a lot to the young guys coming up.
Well, we appreciate that. You know, we're trying to do a lot of good work with the youth with, you know, throughout the county and trying to support them. So, and you guys are the role models. You set the standards, and that's what we're trying to make sure everybody remembers that tradition and what the new generations are coming. So, Bennett Salvatore, thanks for taking some time. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back in just a moment on WSTC 1400 AM.
Hi, this is Bobby Valentine inviting you to step into the winner's circle on Fairfield County Sports Central.
We're back on Fairfield County Sports Central on WSTC 1400 AM. And as we try to do each week, we like to spotlight an organization which is doing great work in keeping our youngsters active and educated about an active, healthy lifestyle as part of our In the Community segment. We also like to keep our listeners informed about what's happening in Fairfield County with activities and events for families and to keep you moving. And a lot of these you may not be aware of. So actually, we're going to try to get both of those done in this segment and talk about the upcoming event that Sound Waters, which is the organization we'll be talking about, will be sponsoring 2 weeks from today on July 22nd down at Cove Island Park in Stanford and Weed Beach in Darien. Here to fill us in on what's going to take place then and get us caught up with all that's going on at Sound Waters as it's, you know, the development of their organization. And our guest is relatively new to it, but it's been an organization that's been around for a long period of time. And we're pleased to have their vice president of development, Bob Mazzoni, who incidentally was one of the founding and longtime members and officers of the Sports Commission, which we will get into a little later in our conversation. So, Bob, welcome to our weekly radio show. And who would have thought that the two of us would be sitting here chatting like this when we got the commission up and running kind of so many years ago?
Yeah, you know, it's ultimately it's about active lifestyles. Ultimately, it's about being involved, and that was what the commission was all about, and that's what we do at Sound Waters. You know, the organization, Sound Waters, is about the environment. Sound Waters is about Long Island Sound, and Long Island Sound is a living, breathing thing. And what impacts Long Island Sound is human impact. And you know, Sound Waters was founded 27 years ago when Long Island Sound was in tough shape and going in the wrong direction, and the thought was that if we get people out on the Sound, if we teach people about Long Island Sound so that they understand the impact that they have on Long Island Sound, both in a negative and a positive way, they will care more for the Sound. And so you fast forward to today, and the Sound is in immeasurably better shape than it was back in the 80s. And it's a lot of that credit goes to people who understand that, you know, if we lay off the Sound, it will actually come back to life. It will rejuvenate itself. It has an amazing power to regenerate. And if we continue to abuse it, it doesn't have that chance. So at Sound Waters, what we do is we teach people about the Sound. We teach kids about the Sound primarily in the hopes that they use that knowledge to make the decisions, you know, that will inform the decisions as they get older.
And what we want to talk about, the event that's coming up, the flotilla of using the Sound correctly and using it for fun and for education. So can you talk a little bit about the event you're organizing again Saturday, July 22nd? This is the first time you're doing it. And for paddle enthusiasts, whether it's through kayaking or paddle boards, this is going to be an event you want to hear about. So, Bob, why don't you talk a little bit about why you come up with this idea and what it's going to be all about?
Well, one of the magical things about getting people involved on Long Island Sound is actually getting them on the Sound. If you get on the water as a kid in a boat, as an adult in a boat, or swimming in the Sound and just playing in the Sound, if you get on the water somehow and enjoy it, you're more likely to care more about it and to take care of it. And so this event called the Sound Waters Flotilla was sort of a convergence of two ideas. It's getting people on the water and then raising money and to help us teach more people about the Sound and about the environment. So we have the opportunity now to push kayaks and paddle boards off the beach at Cove Island on the east side of Stanford, paddle the 4 miles down the coastline of Stanford into Stanford Harbor, and put up on a second location, a Stanford Public Park on Stanford Harbor called Bakutsi Park, where we are starting to teach also. And it's fun. It's a gorgeous, beautiful Saturday morning. It will be a gorgeous, beautiful Saturday morning. It's not too far. 4 miles is not that far. The tide will be with us, and it'll be bright and colorful. It'll be kayakers and paddleboarders, and we'll have safety boats out there, and we'll have plenty of food and water. And then when we get to the other end, we just have fun. We have a beach party. We have food, and we have drinks, and we have music. And everybody sort of celebrates a job well done and enjoys the camaraderie and a terrific day. And it's the first year we're doing this. We've never done anything like this before. And so we're going to build this year, and we're going to build it over the years. And the nice thing about the location of Cove Island is it's about 500 feet away from Weed Beach and Darien. So people who live in Darien can launch from Weed Beach in Darien and join the people launching from Cove Island in Stamford.
Well, you're talking about my old neighborhood with Bacuzzi Park, named after John. Bacuzzi was the local rep for us for a long time. And when I grew up there, it was Southfield Park. But why don't you talk a little about, you mentioned you have a lot of things that you're doing down there, a lot of special things that have been happening. And you mentioned teaching, and I know you got a pretty big boat parked down there, per se. So why don't you talk about some of those other things, which you can lead in some of the other things that Sound Waters does, and in particular down there at Bacuzzi Park.
Well, after about 25 years, Sound Waters came up, had the opportunity to join forces with another terrific, venerable Stamford nonprofit called Young Mariners. And Young Mariners' focus was sailing. Sound Waters has always done a lot of sailing, but Young Mariners was focused entirely on sailing. And so when we joined forces, a few things happened. We increased the amount of sailing we were doing with kids, in particular underserved kids, by a tremendous amount. But we also began working on the traditional Young Mariners site at Bacuzzi Park. Now, that's on Stamford Harbor, which is a tremendous asset. It's the only public access to Stamford Harbor. It's a terrific little neighborhood park, and it has great, and it's on a working harbor. It's a great working place. And so we have started operating all the Young Mariners summer programs, and we've started teaching on that site in other parts of the year. And ultimately, we will be launching a capital campaign to develop a harbor education center in Bacuzzi Park. So that'll be a real, real asset to Stamford. It'll be a great educational facility. And the focus of that will be education for kids, but maybe older kids. It'll be job skills training and marine skills training for older people, and hopefully a career, create pathways to marine careers for older kids. So we're tremendously excited about it. And so again, the flotilla is kind of a convergence of things. We now have a site on the east side of Stamford, and we have a site on the west side of Stamford, and the flotilla will travel from one site to the other.
So your big boat?
Yes.
Talk about that, because it's a great visual.
The Schooner Sound Waters is the floating classroom of Long Island Sound. It actually, the organization was founded on that ship, and that ship was where we taught for the first 10 years or so of the organization's existence. And it has docked all around Stamford in search forever of a permanent home. And so as we develop the Harbor Center at Bacuzzi Park, that will become the permanent home for the Schooner Sound Waters. And right now it is docked down there full time. And it's where where students come to go on the boat. It's where the public comes on the weekends for public sails and sunset sails. And it's a wonderful ship. It's an 80-foot, three-masted schooner. It's a replica of an historic Sharpie schooner from Chesapeake Bay. It is iconic on the Western Sound, but it will sail. What makes it unique is it allows Sound Waters to have an impact up and down the Connecticut coast and up and down the Long Island coast. So we work with 65 different communities in New York and Long Island and Westchester County and up and down the Connecticut coast because of that ship.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you about, because while you're Stamford-centric with a lot of things, but you're involved with kids, you're involved with other communities with all of this. So what are some of the other, are there some other things in terms of kids outside of Stamford that you reach out to, whether it's through the schools and programs, et cetera?
So we will dock this ship 9 different ports over the course of a year or 2 years on Long Island Sound, everywhere from Old Saybrook down to Mamaroneck and Larchmont, over to Hempstead Harbor, Oyster Bay, Port Washington, Port Jefferson, and out to places on the North Fork. And we will do that because the schools will then come down and sail with us and learn science and learn about the sound and study the animals and study the water frankly, have an experience that they will not have during their educational life. For example, every year we will sail for 2 weeks out of Port Washington on Long Island, and we sail with every fourth grader in Port Washington every year and have been doing so for 25 years. It's a big part of their educational curriculum, and it's a big part of the tradition for us. So that's a great example. We'll spend 2 weeks in Mamaroneck and Larchmont. Of course, we'll spend a lot of time in Stamford, and every kid who goes through Stamford Public Schools will sail on Schooner Sound Waters at least one time.
That's terrific. Well, we're talking about the event in the flotilla. I want to kind of segue. The last thing I wanted to talk to you about was I mentioned a little bit at the top of your role in starting the Sports Commission and events that went with it. And you and I were part of a terrific group of people who were kind of on the ground floor when the Sports Commission started, and then when it really morphed into what we are now, which is really a nonprofit, educational, charitable group. And, you know, Bob, you were one of the officers, you're one of the driving forces. And, you know, we just announced our Hall of Famer. So that means that Sports Night's coming up. And number 13, I hope it's lucky 13, but when you and I and a gentleman named Brian O'Gara, who's still working at Major League Baseball, sat down for several hours at my kitchen table, the fate of the Sports Commission through Sports Night and where, well, really was in our hands. So, first of all, can you imagine where we've actually gone to from there? Because you laid such a great foundation, and, you know, I've been kind of the front guy here, but why don't you talk about the good old days of getting this organization up and running and what that foundation was about.
I remember sitting at the table when we learned that the state tourism board had pulled all the funding for the program that we were running, which was a sports commission. And we looked at each other and said, so what do? We fold up shop and go home? And the thought occurred to us all, I think, at the same time is, wait a minute, we can redirect our efforts and do something different. We don't need to focus our efforts on attracting people to hotel rooms and arenas. We can do something else with sports. We all have this in our blood. We all know that sports can be a conduit to great things for young kids. And so we redirected. I remember we redirected our efforts to help kids move forward, gain life skills through sports. Kids who didn't have access to sports or kids who didn't have access to equipment to play sports. And that was really the genesis of it. And Sports Night was a way to originally to raise money to accomplish that mission. But at the same time, it actually was, there was a vacuum in Fairfield County. There was no celebration of sports in Fairfield County. There was no sports event that drew Fairfield County together. And I'm not from this area, but I learned pretty quickly that there is a deep and long and proud sports history in Fairfield County. And I think you've done an amazing job of pulling that together, because every year you get a whole new excited group coming to Sports Night to celebrate the icons of Fairfield County sports.
Well, again, you are a huge part of that, as have been a ton of people over the years, all of our board members, et cetera. So, Bob, thank you very much for coming. Finally, how can people find out about the flotilla? Where's the best way to get information?
It's on the event website, soundwatersflotilla.org. It is in 2 weeks from 2 weeks on July 22nd. It'll be, I think, about a half of your day. It's not a complete day. It's a fun, beautiful, family-oriented event. And we're looking to get this thing started. So we'd love you to come out and support it. Enjoy some time on the sound. And you'll go from one end of Stamford to the other, and we will shuttle you back to your starting point. So if anybody has a question of how do we get back, we'll move you back and we'll move your boat back.
Can't ask for more than that. So Bob Mazzoni, all the great work you're doing at Sound Waters. We'll be looking forward to the event on the 22nd. So thanks so much for coming by. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Fairfield County Sports Central in a short shake.
Past, present, and even the future. If it's sports, it's here on Fairfield County Sports Central.
Welcome back, and as we do each week to end our show on a positive note, we bring you another good sports story of the week. And sometimes, unfortunately, good stories stem from bad things happening that create major obstacles that need to be overcome. There are two parts to this week's story. The first is the story of Ken Green, who last week was just elected to our Fairfield County Sports Hall of Fame. A Danbury native, Ken was a professional golfer for nearly 40 years. He had great success on the PGA Tour, winning five events, earning more than $3.5 million, finishing fourth on the money list in 1988, a seventh place finish in the U.S. Open in 1996, and placing 11th in the Masters in 1989. Some great accomplishments. After turning 50, he joined the Champions Tour in 2008, and more success was likely ahead. But then Green's life took a sharp turn on his road to another chapter of his golf career. He was involved in a tragic auto accident in June of 2009, in which his brother, girlfriend, and dog were all killed. He survived, but his severe injuries led to his lower right leg being amputated, and he was fitted for a prosthetic leg. The following year, he was faced with another tragedy when his son died. In 2010, he was named our Sports Commission's Chelsea Cohen Courage Award winner, which is given annually to the person in our sports community who has faced a major obstacle in their life. Despite his handicap, Green got his health back in order enough to start to play golf again, but not just back with his Danbury buddies. He played in a few Champion Tour events, as well as some Connecticut Senior Opens and Connecticut State Opens, very highly competitive levels. Despite the constant pain in his leg from continuous nerve damage, he marched on. He had another surgery in 2013 to alleviate much of that pain, but the physical pain and mental and emotional anguish from his losses would never entirely disappear. After the surgery in 2013, he was quoted as saying that he hoped his golf quest would motivate people with physical disabilities. "My job is to do something good with this," Ken said, and he has continued to fight on, and his story has inspired many. Now to part two of the story. I don't think it's a coincidence that two of the golf courses that surround Green, who now spends half of his year here at his home in Danbury when he's not in Florida, have stepped up to the forefront of helping people with disabilities to continue to play golf despite the odds. The Ridgefield Golf Course and Candlewood Valley Country Club in New Milford have both invested in a device called a paramobile. A paramobile is an amazing feat of technology that allows those with mobility issues, including amputees and quadriplegics, to play the game they love. The paramobile is one part golf cart and one part transformer. With a push of a button, the three-wheeled motorized cart raises its user from a seated position to standing up in a few seconds. Straps and belts secure the golfer in the upright position, even those who are incapable of standing on their own, so they can take their best shots. In a story about the paramobile in the Danbury News Times, a former pro golfer who once held the club record at 67 at Ridgefield, Greg Jacobson, marveled at the fact that he could now be back on the course and enjoy a round despite living through progressive multiple sclerosis, which has been eroding his physical abilities since 2008 and confining him to a wheelchair since 2015. Jacobson's desire to get back to being on the course pushed him to do some research and led him to Anthony Netto, who invented the paramobile. That led to Ridgefield Course securing one of the paramobiles, and then Candlewood Valley, which now has three. The club raised money through a golf tournament last year to pay for the paramobiles, which cost approximately $32,000 apiece. In September, Candlewood Valley has scheduled a second such event to try and continue to find ways to expand their fleet and also to keep the cost low for users and the companion they go out on the course with. The clubs are both involved with Stand Up and Play Foundation, which is a charity organization whose primary purpose is to raise money to help pay for paramobiles. So not only is there now hope for people with mobility issues who had given up on golf, but the Paramobile has turned that hope into reality. It would be great to see other golf courses in the area follow the lead of Ridgefield and Candlewood Valley to try and find ways to have at least one Paramobile at each course to really be able to give more opportunities for those with disabilities to continue to play golf. And for Ken Green, who's gone through this life-changing turmoil with his health, he may be one of those to benefit from the Paramobile at some point and to continue his battle to help others who have experienced what he has since 2009 to have golf back in their lives. So that's our good sports story of the week, and hopefully maybe some of the other courses, the public courses, can get behind this. And I think it's just a terrific idea. And with Kenny going into our Hall of Fame, we're looking forward to seeing him in October at our annual sports night dinner, which will be at the Stanford Marriott on Monday, October 16th. Well, that does it for Fairfield County Sports Central. Tom Chapetta, I want to thank my guests, Bennett Salvatore and Bob Mazzoni, for being with us today. And have a great weekend, everybody.